You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In City Boy, Edmund White wrote about the New York City that he found when he arrived in 1962 and gay life here in the 1960s and 70s. Now, in his latest memoir, Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris, Mr. White chronicles his move to France in 1983 and how, to his surprise, he fell in love with the city over the 15 years he spent there. Edmund White was here in March to talk about his memoir, and we are replaying that interview for you now as we begin this long holiday weekend. I start off by pointing out that in 1982, Edmund White's novel, A Boy's Own Story, had been published to much acclaim, and I asked him, did that help you get a Guggenheim Fellowship the following year?
Well, Susan Sontag wrote for me, and I think that helped. And maybe the fact that I had a hit book was good, too.
And you decided to move to Paris just because you could?
Yeah. I mean, I thought I would only go for 1 year, and I ended up staying 15 years. So, but when I first went, I had lunch with Sarah Plimpton, George Plimpton's sister, and she said, oh, yeah, I thought I would only stay 1 year, too. And then she'd been there 20 years.
Well, most people love Paris, although maybe not to live in. Mm-hmm. Is there a big difference between the Paris that I would be very happy to visit for a week or two, visiting the Louvre as often as possible, eating at some pretty nice restaurants, and the Paris that you live in for 15 years?
Well, I mean, the people who live there complain that all of life is nothing but work, sleep, and the subway. You know, I guess that's true of New York or any big city. But, you know, I suppose you have to like the social life there because and it's very different from New York's life.
Well, you moved there with your lover, John. You obviously took to it right away, but he didn't. Why?
Well, he never really learned French and never made that big of an effort. He was good at understanding French, but he couldn't really speak it. And I was good at speaking it, but I couldn't understand it.
You told your editors at Vogue that you spoke the language fluently.
Yeah, that was a lie.
So you had to learn it on the fly?
Yes, definitely. And my very first assignment was to interview Eric Rohmer, probably the most intellectual of all film directors. And he was totally brilliant, but I had to tape what he said, and I couldn't ask any follow-up questions. And then I ran to my translator who told me what he'd said.
Mm-hmm. So you just – he must have thought it was a rather stilted conversation.
I'm sure, because I just gave these rather slow, self-conscious questions, and then no repartee at all.
How many people did you know when you arrived?
Two. I knew, but they were very good, too. One was Gilles Barbadet, who was a very up-and-coming young novelist and editor and translator. And the other person was Marie-Claude de Brunhoff, who was the ex-wife of the man who did Babar the Elephant. And she was a literary scout, scouting books in French for Knopf and books in English for Gallimard.
And you suggest that she had a gift for friendship. Do the French view friendship differently than Americans?
Yeah, I think so, very much so. I mean, they're very conscious of all the gradations of intimacy. I mean, there's obviously the difference between tu and vous, the formal and the informal you.
And when do you decide to switch over? I mean, how well do you have to know a person? Is somebody shocked if you suddenly start, if you switch the two?
If they're young, no. But if they're middle-aged or older, they are shocked. Or if they're rather formal people. And you have to ask permission to call them two. I had tea with these two old women in my building who had known each other for 50 years and were best friends, and they still called each other vous.
Now, your memoir, City Boy, chronicled gay life in New York in the 60s and 70s. Was AIDS starting to change everything in the early 80s?
Definitely. I was the first president of the Gay Men's Health Crisis, which plunge me into that whole world. I mean, Larry Kramer was really the force behind it, but I took on the job as president. And
he probably would have been a little too combative to function as a good president.
Well, he quit in a huff and started ACT UP, which was a very valuable organization. I think he thought that gay men's health crisis was too sedate.
Were you already HIV positive at that point?
Probably, but there was no test for it until 1985. So as soon as there was a test, I had the test, and I turned out, of course, to be positive.
And you only had the test when your lover named Tease insisted that you get tested? Had AIDS become a big thing in Paris as well?
Yes, I think so. I mean, by 1984 or 5, it was certainly a very big thing. I mean, Michel Foucault, the famous philosopher, died of it in 84. He was a friend of mine. And in 85, of course, Rock Hudson died, and everybody talked about that.
Well, the French scientists played a major role in even figuring out how HIV worked. So I guess they must have been interested for reasons other than the fact that it just was good science. You're known as a slow progressor.
Yeah,
and so is there a genetic thing that helped you survive before the cocktail was devised?
Yeah, I think so. I don't really understand it perfectly, but what I've heard is that if you have two genes, you don't get sick ever. And there are lots of examples of, for instance, women who are prostitutes in Africa who, even though they've been exposed thousands of times, never get sick or never become positive. And then there are other people like me who have one gene and it takes several years for them to get sick.
And so that kept you going until the cocktail?
Until the cocktail kicked in, yeah.
But you had a stroke more recently. That's not related in any way, is it?
Probably.
You say you wrote this book while you were in the hospital recovering?
Yeah. I mean, I had already started it, but then I had a very serious stroke, and I was in the hospital for a month, and I couldn't walk or talk, but I could still scribble, so I scribbled this.
My guess is Edmund White, and the book that he scribbled is called Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris. You had given up drinking and stopped smoking not long before you moved to Paris. Well, when I think of Paris, I think about people drinking and smoking. Did that cut down on your social life?
Not really. The French are really very polite about drinks. They don't really push drinks the way some Americans do. And, I mean, they always assume you're on some cure for your liver or something. And but I certainly missed out on a lot of great wines.
Now, you were you became the European correspondent for Vogue?
Well, it just as a freelance writer. But I American Vogue hired me and paid me by the article to write about, on a monthly basis, about cultural life in Paris.
I assume that you also had a generous expense account, because you need that if you're going to write about cultural life in Paris.
Yeah, I was able to buy opera tickets, for instance, which cost the earth.
Well, readers of City Boy already know that you seem to have a talent for meeting notable people. Here you talk about getting to know Milan Kundera, Italo Calvino, a man I've always fantasized talking with. Alain Robbe-Grillet, you interviewed Yves Saint Laurent. You had your manuscripts typed by Frank Stella's daughter.
Yeah.
You traveled to London often, so you would see Martin Amis, although now all you have to do is go to Brooklyn to see Martin Amis. Julian Barnes, Marina Warner, Alan Hollinghurst. Was that because the artistic world and the writing world were smaller in Paris and London? Because it's harder to do that in New York, where it seems to be so spread out.
Yes, that's true. I think in there are different reasons. I mean, in Paris, people are very social, and writers have a certain prestige, which they probably don't have anyplace else in the world. And so one is invited out a lot, but usually with people in quite different professions. I mean, Paris hostesses tried to put together a kind of bouquet of all different people. So you might have one admiral and one businessman and one writer and one actress and so on.
Well, there's a sense that there are still public intellectuals in France, and that is less common in the United States. You think that's true?
Yes, I think it's true. I mean, we had great ones like Susan Sontag, but they're no longer with us. I mean, Mary McCarthy was sort of one, and I mean, there are different public intellectuals in America, probably Noam Chomsky, but maybe because they don't all live in the same city, or they're not living anymore.
Or maybe we don't respect them as much as other countries do.
I mean, I was surprised when Foucault died. It was front page news in every newspaper in France. And I don't think a philosopher dying in America would make the front page.
No, Lou Reed did.
Lou Reed.
While you were in Paris, you wrote a biography of the writer Jean Genet, which was published in 1993. Would you have written it if you hadn't moved to Paris?
Probably not, because I had to interview hundreds of people. And I had to learn a lot of the intricacies of French life, like how did the public welfare system work and how did children get adopted and so on.
And you were speaking French better at this point.
Yes, and although I had to interview Jean Genet's godmother, who was 101, who couldn't speak French, she spoke the dialect of the Morvan, and her granddaughter translated that into French for me.
Then you also wrote about Rimbaud and Proust. I'm assuming you read them in the original French.
Yeah.
So at this point, did you think you were just going to live in France?
Well, I could easily have done that, but I was always had trouble, as freelance writers always have, of paying the rent. And so when Princeton offered me a job, I gladly accepted.
But you were giving up... Well, you had two different lives, really. One was living on the Ile Saint-Louis in the center of Paris. You had trips to the Cannes Film Festival. You were invited to Elizabeth Taylor's party at Catan, right? And then there was the other side where you were seeing people die of AIDS.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've been a prolific writer in many different genres, essays, short stories, novels, memoirs. By my account, this is your 25th book, and many of your novels are considered autobiographical. So are you pretty much always writing about Edmund White, whether you're writing a memoir or a novel?
Well, that's the great relief of writing a biography, is you don't have to say I for once. I think I'll probably write one more autobiography, because I was just asked by Basic Books to write a book called A Life of Reading. And, I mean, that would just be about all the books in my life.
Will you also write about your return to the United States in this third memoir?
Well, in Inside of Pearl, I do talk about that, coming back to the States and what it felt like and how strange it was.
In an interview you gave while you were writing this memoir, you said that you were worried that the French people you wrote about would be offended because they're more thin-skinned. Have you heard from any of them?
Well, last night... Sarkozy's daughter was in the audience when I gave a reading, and I didn't know her. She was a date of a friend of mine. And I asked her if she thought I was accurate about the French. And she said, oh, absolutely, that I would write the same thing.
Carla Bruni is in New York now, or coming to New York, so you'll be able to catch up with her as well.
I met her sister.
But you decided to return to New York, to the United States, simply because you needed the job at Princeton?
Yeah, that and my boyfriend, now my husband, Michael Carroll, really didn't like France so much.
And you must have been shocked by all the people who had died in the interim, until the cocktail was finally devised.
A couple hundred of my friends. I mean, absolutely everybody I ever knew. And the thing is that people don't talk about this, but when you walk down the street in Greenwich Village, let's say, you see dozens of people whose names you don't even know, but you're used to nodding with them, and those people are suddenly gone.
Edmund White is the author of three memoirs, My Lives, City Boys, and now Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris. Also, he's known as a literary biographer and essayist. And his book is published by Bloomsbury. It's been a pleasure having you on our show again.
Thank you very much.